KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm John O'Brien. Welcome to Speakers Forum, a series of talks and interviews with writers, artists, storytellers, and thinkers recorded at events around Seattle. Our guest this week is Sandra Singh Lowe. She's a writer, performer, mom, caretaking daughter, and the host of the radio series The Lowdown on Science and The Low Life. As you'll hear in a moment, she's kind of a whirlwind. Lowe's new book is The Mad Woman in the Volvo, My Year of Raging Hormones. In it, she takes on her experience of menopause. Lowe refers to women such as herself as Generation Triple M, middle-aged moms in menopause. As she relates, their numbers are growing. Middle-aged women 45 to 60 are America's largest demographic group, and by 2015, almost half of American women will be menopausal. Lowe is a great natural comedian. She knows how to make what happened to her seem hysterically funny. But it's not all a joke. Her research and probing gets to the heart of things, uncovering troves of helpful coping advice. Sandra Singh Lowe was interviewed at Town Hall Seattle by KUOW's Marcy Silman on May 6, 2014. Town Hall and Elliott Bay Book Company presented the event as part of the Arts and Culture series, sponsored by City Arts.
It's wonderful to see you back in Seattle. It's
been quite some time. Oh, I'm really happy to be back.
So this book has a lot of threads, but at the very start, you're at least on the surface, contented, suburban mother of two. And then you take this fateful trip to Burning Man. Do you want to tell us what happened?
Sure. Who here has been to Burning Man? Hands up. Okay, right here in front. Well, for those of you who don't know what Burning Man is, it's very much a middle-aged passage, a ridiculous middle-aged passage to go in your 40s, which I did. I was with a group of public school moms that we had just thrown a public school rally, and we had camped with 100 women and their children in RVs, and I learned to drive an RV, and I so loved driving an RV that I go, where can we go next? Burning Man, which is an annual pagan festival with some nudity, maybe some hallucinogenics, and where 50,000 people make a temporary city in the desert, in the Nevada desert. A lot of like software engineers from the Northwest go there and, you know, quietly smoke some pot or do whatever they do. But we thought we would go there for the art and the spirituality. That was our plan. And so about 8 of us crammed into a couple of RVs, like 40-something moms. Yeah, you know, lots of moisturizer, Clinique SPF 90, which we put on with our beekeeper's hats just to go to Trader Joe's, as I like to say. And then what happened, but what happens, I don't know if you spent much time in the desert, if you don't get enough hydration, suddenly I realized, now my theater manager, who had been my best friend for 10 years, best platonic friend, as sometimes we married people have, I turned to him suddenly in this Merchant Ivory movie moment and said, oh my gosh, I think it's you who I love after 10 years. Because, yeah, exactly. And I think, but we will never get together because we are married and have children. And I guess at 46, I am no longer dead to the world. There's one more man I would have been curious to sleep with, but it will never happen. So now excuse me while I go hurl my youth into the fire. And it was this moment where it's kind of like, wow, my youth is over at 46. Now I see I was totally content in my sort of Peter Mayle, A Year in Provence. I thought I had started those years 10 years earlier, that if I just get some great Italian tile and a nice Merlot and my book on tape at night, and, you know, and there's always something really good on HBO, right? Always. So that's going to be fine. You're settled, cat, and they're a little bit. And I realized that something awakened inside me. It was a bit of this cloud lifting of, like, I am not dead yet. I still feel passion, and I am in love. I'm madly in love at 46. I didn't think I could feel these feelings again. And it went very smoothly from there. No, it did not. And what I would say before I toss back to you, so it turns out, you know, that there's menopause, which is when stuff evens out, and it's a pretty great place to be. I'm 52, and I think it's actually a fantastic, calm, great place to be. But perimenopause is the years beforehand when your hormones start to do this, and it can start in your 30s. It can go between 4 and 15 years, and the average onset is 46, the exact age I began my affair at Burning Man. And also, I say in the Bridges of Madison County, French, do you remember? Yeah, hands up like you can be. Like, Francesca is 46, I believe, in that moment as well. Although she behaved much more sensibly, I suppose. But I don't know. I'd love to hear what people think about that. Thank you.
But. No, not at all. Well, so you did not behave sensibly, but it wasn't just the hormones.
Yes.
It wasn't just the hormones. You both of you, blew up your lives.
Yes, we totally blew up our lives for about 4 months. I mean, just really, just that onrush of adolescent behavior and of those feelings. And I think that if you hit 46 and you go, there's daylight, there's somebody I love who loves me back, let's run for it. Because if we're 90, 97, and are on our deathbeds and we didn't go for this, we might have a regret forever and ever. And this already was my best friend. So we, for 4 months, I say in the book, we acted like pirates. We smoked. I don't smoke cigarettes. Suddenly it was about smoking, because that's really bad. So let's smoke, you know, vodka and like whatever, meeting in hotel rooms. It was kind of unbelievable. And then about 4 months in, we decided this is just too painful and awful. We don't want to lie. So what we're going to do is the sensible 21st century thing. We will come clean with a team of therapist standing by. We will tell our kids will be fine because they're young enough and old enough, and we'll tell our spouses with a team of therapists. At one point, I had such a great therapist, Barbara, a Jewish tribal elder, where I go, she can both maybe tell him, manage his reaction, and maybe the insurance will cover it, you know? Or so it's like you know, you're just trying to manage, like, and it'll make it okay, and it totally did not, because it's just an awful thing to break marriages up. So we were kicked out of our houses. We moved to this bachelor cabin, as I've described, and then 4 months later, the pain was too terrible in his family, so he broke up with me and moved home. So right, so now I'm like, I'll just finish. I mean, it's a really purple story, maybe more than you were expecting to hear. So now I'm a divorced woman alone in a cabin with no TV, out of my mind. My kids are going back and forth. I've written a piece for The Atlantic, and the case against marriage is this huge backlash. I'm on the Today Show. Meredith Vieira says, is it true you had an affair, before they cut to commercial? And I, of course, now can't sleep at night. I really cannot sleep at all. The four walls of the cabin close in. So I very sensibly get a prescription from Ambien and pair it with Chardonnay. By the way, you're not supposed to do that. And so after the first night, I wake up, I sleep on my arm too much. I wake up, and now my entire right side is paralyzed. Good try. Yeah, it's like, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, what next? What next? And it's kind of like, how metaphorical is this? I have a claw, exactly like that. I cannot write a check. I cannot drive a car. I'm glad you're enjoying my pain so much. That's really great. You know, I can't pick up a cell phone. Metaphor, and the final metaphor is like, I'm trying to put a down payment on a house that's going to be the perfect bungalow that's going to solve my problems. At this point in middle age, when you're drinking Chardonnay with your angry other divorced girlfriends, the only thing that will solve it is a really nice little piece of real estate. Little bungalow with the perfect windows, and I get the right one. It's perfect for me. I will feel, and so, but they say, well, you know, there's another seller competing against you, so maybe if you give them a book and like sign it. So I go, that's right, I'm an author, and I will take care of their beautiful home. So I open my book, and with my claw, I try to write, I am an author, and I love your beautiful home. But it's like death, murder, serial killer. But I mean, it's kind of because I'm writing with this claw. So it's damaging. It's very metaphorical. And that's the opening of the book.
Wow. Yeah. Life in the suburbs is more exciting than we thought. One thing we were talking about before we came and sat in these chairs, I actually am curious, women and men out there, did anybody tell you guys how long the build-up to menopause was going to take?
No.
Did anybody? I mean, what did you know about this?
I knew absolutely nothing. And I think that all I knew from menopause I knew from menopause was that my mother she was about my same age when she started to go nuts, and all we knew, she was grew up in the 1960s and 70s, so she was that kind of, instead of the mad men, I call it the mad women era, where I wear Crocs and a fanny pack, and she wore kind of lipstick, she wore an apron in the kitchen, a white pleated tennis skirt on the tennis court, and put on like jewelry and poochie like silk dresses and heels and lipstick to go to the butcher, and you had butchers then, totally different time, in the Buick with tail fins. So, and they didn't really, and so that's the mask that they provided in for us, and all we knew is, you know, for years mom has been drying the dishes in the kitchen, and then overnight she's hurling them. You know, why? And everybody seems to remember from that time, just mom was like Doris Day, and then suddenly she was screaming, and we didn't know why, and throwing things, and then often then they would just wash into their bedroom, curtains shut, for hours, days, and people sometimes tell me, and it's on your questionnaires, I'm curious to know, years. One person said, oh, my mom went to bed for 4 years. She just like, you know, and we could come in and play an instrument quietly and go away. And so we didn't know anything about what was going on. So that's all we know. And today there is, it isn't really much talked about what it is. You see it sort of on a daytime television commercial of like a lady sadly looking out a window into the fog, and then quiet piano music comes on. It's Cymbalta. You know, I don't know if you guys, you know, have Pandora, and all I need to put on is like solo piano music just playing, and all these Cymbalta commercials will come on. So, you know, like if I'm listening to piano music, I'm very depressed. So that's all we sort of know about the sort of medicating of it. And I found that when I was just really gloomy one day and I had an inappropriate reaction to just having to make your own pizza for your kids because I was depressed about thinking about going to Trader Joe's in the very bad parking lots. Never enough parking. And the thought of trying to park at Trader Joe's, I'm going to commit suicide right now. That's probably an inappropriate reaction. And, you know, it's like, you know, okay, it's a small parking lot. Okay, the dough is kind of ropey, the whole wheat dough. It's like, no, I can't do it anymore. And then a friend of mine said, you know, well, have you had your last period? Because I was crying by the side of the road. And I said, I can't remember. She said, you might be menopausal. And I go, well, that's really awesome. That's great. I thought I was going mad. Menopause, that's all it is. Yay, it has a solution. But when I found myself reading all these menopause books, they were really complicated and only recommended sort of drinking water and eating kale. Why? You know? And, you know, when I was pregnant, it was drinking water and eating kale didn't work for me then. Why would it work now? They always recommend that for women, don't
well,
they?
They do. And, you know, you can make kale taste good and water, too. But I'm not sure it's the solution
really,
for
Marcy?
Menopause.
Really, Marcy?
Truly,
you are
I make
mad.
A good kale salad.
Okay.
So this the thing that's interesting about this book is that there's a lot of strands. And some of the strands are common to all of us. You write about them in a different way. We, most of us who hit this age, have aging parents. Your particular father figures prominently in this story as well. So in addition to love, divorce, raising kids, and chemical imbalance, there's this other part that most of us have to deal with, is like, how are we going to cope? Your dad has a particular story that most of us don't have to deal with. Does everybody, you've all read about Sandra's father, right?
Well, in a nutshell, my father is a rather eccentric Chinese engineer who right now is 93 years old, and he was always an eccentric character, very cheap. He lives in Malibu, California, but eats routinely out of dumpsters because it's fun. And I'm talking dumpster food. This is not your average day-old bagel. This is sushi. Expired sushi. Oh, and going to Starbucks and pouring other people's drinks all together and making a wonderful colada. Oh, of some kind. And of course, his immune system is unkillable, right? Because he's been doing this for so many years, he'll never die. He's 93. And what happened was after my mother died early of Alzheimer's disease, he married a series of Chinese mail order brides. Three of them, three women in a row, practically greeting them on the tarmac, and they didn't speak English, and like, here's your mom. But the last one, Alice, is about 20 years younger than him, and that was supposed to be his sort of health insurance policy, to have a younger woman, you know, massage his bunions and cut up his fruit and take care of him. But then what eventually ends up happening, though, is that in her 70s, she gets dementia. So now she will live a long time. We're taking care of her. My dad gets a real nurse at the expense, I'm just telling you, many college tuitions are being hemorrhaged every day, of course. And but now he's getting such great care, he kind of bounces back. You know, it's kind of like, because he lived on expired sushi, okay? So if somebody actually bathes him once a week, he's coming back, you know, or like, and so we have this kind of giant baby sort of in a wheelchair, but very active, sort of wheelchairing to the front of UCLA lecture halls and sort of disrupting class and questioning the professor and shouting at people. And also, I hate to say it, you know, I hate to say it, and you can cut it out of the broadcast, but like, and he's ready for sex. Oh, yes. You hear? I'm like, yeah, let's go. It's like, oh, that's, yeah, no, 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 TMI, TMI. And I just need 1/16th of a Viagra and I'm ready for what? It's, you know, it's like, you don't want to know. So you have this parent that's sort of the inappropriate, I have, you know, just be the granddad and send college tuitions and maybe a Christmas card and that's it. But he's just roaring with life and we have to take care of him. So.
Right. Now, you have a sister. You have an older, older sister. So, did you two have power of attorney over his affairs?
She finally does, and it was, you know, and it's funny because he would never sign anything except that one time that I finally had to get him to sign his will, where. It's kind of a public radio story. I was interviewing Garrison Keillor in Los Angeles, and I got my dad to come to say behind scenes to say hello to Garrison Keillor, and then we had a witness there, and he signed his will right there. So Garrison Keillor actually was the witness for my dad. Just kind of a good story. I think that's a pretty good story.
It's a very good story.
But you just have to force him to do it. So finally, so. But it's a terrifying problem when you look at, you know, how long our people live. And I think that we're just at a really weird time. In 1900, our life expectancy was about 48 years old. Now it's like 90 and beyond. And, you know, and so menopause is actually only this, fertility is this middle third of our lives. And our elder parents are living on and on and on.
We'll be right back with more of this interview with Sandra Singh Low. Her new book is The Mad Woman in the Volvo, My Year of Raging Hormones. Coming up, statistics on the average working mom and a cave in L.A. For KUOW 94.9 Seattle and Speakers Forum, I'm John O'Brien.
923-94.9 KUOW. Later tonight, a little celebration of the Ramones' eponymous debut album, Going Gold, 38 years after its initial release. That's part of As It Happens tonight at 11. Weather outlook for the Seattle area for tonight, lows in the 50s, showers and a slight chance of thunderstorms this evening, rain after midnight. Friday highs around 60, rain likely in the morning, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers in the afternoon. Support for KUOW comes from the UW Medicine East Side Specialty Center in Bellevue, recently relocated and expanded. The center now provides more than 18 medical specialties, including urgent care and low-dose radiology. UWMedicine.org/Eastside.
Welcome back to Speakers Forum on KUOW 94.9 Seattle. Our guest is writer and performer Sandra Singh Low. Her new book, The Mad Woman in the Volvo, My Year of Raging Hormones, is sharply funny, but deals seriously with her experience of menopause. In it, she writes, "At 47, I began experiencing not just varying periods, hot flashes, worsening insomnia, and bloating, but terrifying inky moods I started to call attacks of the darkies." KUOW's Marcy Silman picks up the next thread.
And so you've got this now 93-year-old father.
Yeah.
But you also have youngish kids.
Yes, because I gave birth late. I like to say like a National Geographic turtle washing up on the beach with her last leathery eggs. I had my kids at 38 and 40, so, and Irma Bombeck has this crack that she wonders at our generation. We've adjusted the timetable for childbearing so that going into menopause and teaching a 16-year-old how to drive a car will occur in the same week. Yeah, the wisdom of Bombeck, and that's kind of what I'm going through. We're all going absolutely mad right now, because I got girls 12 and 13, and I'm 52, and it's like, all the time in our house.
Now, so the first husband, Mr. X,
yes,
as he's referred to in this book, you and he shared custody,
yes,
still share,
yes,
custody of these daughters, but you're like so many women. You know, mostly I just see so many of our lives, you are caught in between, there's dad, and he lives a ways from where your house is. These daughters who you're shuttling, you still actually have a career where you're, theoretically, you're writing during all of this stuff, and you're trying to figure out how to make yourself sane.
Yes. And it's a lot. And I think that it's just kind of like where we are at this point in evolution that's pretty interesting. We're at an age where sort of in old tribes for women who lived this long, this is sort of the age where women got to go into a cave and be alone, a very cold cave, I would hope. And sort of in India, in the Hindu tradition, it's kind of like that's when the women kind of ascended to a more spiritual place and they can meditate and think about other things. So here you are and you're reacting to every, like, and you're surrounded by all these people all the time, and it's very challenging. And also, as I sort of write a little bit in the book, in my day, my mom, you know, they were all allowed to have gothic moods in menopause. There was always the dining room table and the throwing at the dining room table when people ate together. Now people eat in their rooms, and it's different. It's a relief. But now it's like even parenting is different. And there's another statistic that today, an average full-time working mother spends more time with her kids per week than a 1950s stay-at-home mother, right? Yeah, and it's because it's kind of like, come home at 6 o'clock when the dinner bell comes, you know, after, and over the weekend, you just ride your bike all over the neighborhood. You weren't shuttled to ballet or piano or gymnastics, and so we have a lot more time together with these kids. And like, I tell a scene in the story where we gave my mother for her 48th birthday a glass Pyrex baking dish because she really liked to bake. And she said, "What is this? This is so cruel." And she hurled it against the wall, right? And I go, "Well, that's probably a pretty good call because we thought of her as a baker and it didn't hit anyone, but that's fine." But I could never hurl anything. Well, A, because I always say, because the stuff that you hurled in the 60s had a lot more ka-chunk, like a black dial phone. And, you know, you can't, who throws an iPhone today? I mean, it has no weight, or a Kindle or an iPad. It's all in the cloud. So we don't, we are so worried about our fragile children that we don't want to scare them, or they might not do as well on that math test. So we just kind of bottle it up.
So how did your kids deal with all this?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, and they had to have, like, experience me through a really just gothic time where they knew mom went in and out of the house and she lived in a strange little place. And when she came and was with them, my husband was a musician, so we went out of town. I would come in town and take care of into the house and then go away. And I would just sort of cry and something, but So the difference was, because I really had to deal, and like you said, this is a serious underpinning to this book. It is funny, but there's a journey that is going back to my mother of, like, I remembered my mother's being depressed. I am not a depressed person, but when all of this started happening to me, I go, I am cracking up. I do not feel like getting out of bed. I am looking at my children. I hope they don't see the dead eyes. Am I becoming like her? Because she did retreat, and that was really a sad thing in my life, that she was, once she got the depression and the Alzheimer's, she never came back. And, you know, as the youngest child, I typically could jolly her out of stuff, and there, it came to a point where my little youngest song and dance did not work, and she left forever. And so I was like going, man, I don't want to be this particular person. So what happened, though, was I could never, there wasn't really a lock on my door at the time. So I was like, oh, mommy's depressed. But my children were so confident because they're gifted, like everyone's kids are gifted. They're gifted and talented. So they just make me a fun card. I'll say, woo. So they would always just march in, sit on the side of the bed. I'd say, I'm so sorry. And they go, I know, that's fine. And my eldest, who was at that point about 12, she would start to sort of brush my hair, but almost like smugly, like, she's brushing a pony's hair, because she was like confident that she could get me back and that she's gifted and talented. She's good. And so we would just start watching TV and popcorn, and I would hold them to me, and I felt better. I felt better. So I don't know. So they're used to, in a way, seeing a mother blow up but recover fairly quickly as opposed to disappear. So in a way, it's kind of worked out, I think. We'll see.
This book it's like a braid. There are many strands in it, so I'm kind of jumping in and out, and you'll have to read it to weave it all together yourself. But you mentioned going to the cave, and you did find, I suppose, the LA area version of it. You have a friend who's married who lives in the cave I want to go to. So maybe you want to tell us about this little retreat that you took.
Sun-swept drive. And, okay, so now this is, so I have blown up the, you know, my marriage blew up, and then I had an affair with Mr. Y, and then he actually eventually came back. And so it's kind of like the Anna Karenina and Vronsky section, where they go to Europe and start remodeling a palazzo and start putting on weight and just getting back into ordinary domestic life. And so we have our own set of blows, because that now I really start to go into the perimenopausal symptoms, and the household comes apart, and we fight, and it's sort of ridiculous, but actually kind of true, that I get that middle-aged, this is a little more backstory than you need, but I'll go through it quickly. I start to get that kind of floaty that comes around the stomach, and I go, oh my God, I'm eating less and less, and I'm putting on weight from the air. So we go on the same diet, and you couples, like, we go on the same zone diet and the same exercise routine. I, of course, have to eat less than his. I don't get that many grams of fat. And after 2 months, he has lost 27 pounds, and I have gained 4. And I am hungry. I'm counting the carbs in ketchup. Have you done that? Have you counted the carbs in ketchup? And I go, honey, it just doesn't seem fair that I'm... And then he had started to not even work out, and he was having pad thai and beer at lunch, still dropping the weight, feeling fantastic. And I'm just like, just gnawing on my fingernails, my green tea bag. And I go, it seems really unfair. And then he had the mistake of saying to me, but I will get back to your point, where he goes, you know what? I know that I don't work out as often as you do, but when I do, I work out really hard. So yeah, so it's kind of like, so that's the difference. That's why I could eat a bagel, because I get my, you know, reps up to, it's ridiculous. So we blow up, and therapy doesn't solve it. And I'm again so depressed again that I really, it comes to a point where I come to realize what I'm really looking for is a mom. And you can't find that necessarily in a man to solve all those problems. You know, and I think that there's this thing of people in domestic lives together where my mother and my grandma was German, and her house was beautiful. Clocks, polished wood, beautiful lunches in silver and sterling. I mean, it was just domestic harmony is that. My mother less so, and my house is a complete, you know, all the Gladware doesn't quite close, because we put it in the microwave once, and none of it closes ever again. And to feel just unglued by the things in your house that are coming apart. And what it is, it's a metaphor for every time, oh, there's a leak in the floor, and the, you know, just the small things that go wrong, the medicine and God, it won't close, or, you know, and it is because it seems small to get so upset about something like that, but the totemic thing is that mom's not here, because if mom was here, Gladware would close, the kitchen cabinet would close, there wouldn't be this leak, my car wouldn't have ants, which my car does, my mother's never did. So I end up going to, and also we can't treat our men like valets, which is sometimes middle-aged women, you know, they sort of want their boyfriend or husband to give them a foot rub or a back rub or concierge the travel. So you don't want a husband, you want a concierge or a masseuse. That's finally what you get. And you want to go to... So my friend Jude lived in this house on a beautiful home. They lived together, but they had separate bedrooms, if they needed, separate entrances, separate bathrooms, and he had a pot of money, and so they had a full-time handyman that was there fixing everything all the time, which was great, but she didn't do nothing. She kept a list of what constantly had to be fixed all the time, so that house, you could feel it was running, and it was, and the whirring, and it was kind of on timers, and it was orderly, and it was a place where I finally felt sort of at home and at peace, you know, but somebody's taking care of you, mom. And I think that's why sometimes when I finally see my dream gynecologist at the end, it's like you just want somebody, and your husband can't always do it, just to take you and just go, you know what, it's, you are working so hard, it's going to be fine, and just a mother figure that many of us don't have.
How long did you actually stay with this friend, Jude?
Oh, well, actually, I stayed on and off with her. I would go, like, for a couple weeks, like a 2 or 3 week period. I mean, I didn't stay with her fully all that time, but I would go back and forth for a while, and she's going to throw me a book party in L.A. But I, even in my, like, there's some, and I had another friend, and that was actually a conflation of a couple friends, that had the spare bedroom, and you have your own bath, and they folded the towels, and that is a haven if somebody will do that.
No, I think, I mean, I'll put the list up. You guys can sign up. I'm ready to come in there.
Yeah.
But this was your version of that cave, that Indian cave, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Of some place where you can just go. And I just, at this period of time, had to get away from my house. Because as I described my house, the nests upon nests upon nests of things in every room. And it was a house where everywhere people were always canting their chin up to the ceiling and saying, ketchup, we need ketchup. Or toilet paper, we need toilet paper, like to the ceiling. As if it, like, and who lives in the ceiling? It's me. I'm the one that's like getting all the toilet paper. And it was just really, I just wanted to get away from that house where all that laundry and all that stuff seemed to be tied to me. I just wanted to divorce my house, you know, just to walk away from it. So hence going to somebody else's house, and kind of like your room of one's own. There's a place where when you're 20s and 30s, you want a bigger and bigger house. And then suddenly I was approaching 50 and I wanted a smaller house with less stuff in it. Because I would have to take care of it.
That somebody else would clean.
Yes, exactly. No, exactly. And yes, and there's that other point where it's a very short chapter where I'm walking along a trail. I see a woman walking a dog and they both look fantastic. And I go, I want a dog. I go, no, I don't want a dog. I want to rent that dog to take a walk. And at the end of the trail, I want a van load of 20-something interns to remove the dog from me and feed it and take care of it. So it's not in my house. I just want that moment, but not the extra care of the dog. A rent a dog. It's a good idea.
Some cuddliness of dogdom.
Yeah.
All of us go through this aging process. I mean, as they say, the alternative is much worse than going through it. But I imagine that in the L.A. area, it's harder. Because I can't think of anywhere in the United States where youth and beauty and perfectness, I guess perfection's the perfect word there, is more important than the land that brings us television and movies.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting point. I mean, I had an earlier book, I would say ironically, called A Year in Van Nuys when I was 36, mm-hmm. and really at that point where it's kind of like the very tail end fumes of any possible ingenue years you might ever have had, right? Just, you know, kind of, can I get away one more year with my eye bags or whatever? So it's ironic, in that particular time, because I always happened to have sort of Abe Lincoln eye bags from mm-hmm. the age of 24, it just was this pocket of fat, and I was still trying to get a young person's job, so I had lunchtime laser surgery, had them zipped out, and it was fantastic. And I was so happy that I thought I looked so great. I stopped really dressing well or putting on makeup and my hair because I go, I look great because I don't have eye bags. People go, why don't you brush your hair? So I think after I went through that, I think I experience in LA that somehow people they haven't been young for a long time. The women I know, but I know women in their 50s who look better than they did in their 30s because of the cosmetic procedures that are ever so much more tailored. They're really working out a lot and they're doing Pilates and God knows what. So I experience those women looking better because most, like, nobody can pretend to be young anymore, so they found some other pocket. And I guess I do find with cable, et cetera, that there's actually, ironically, more room for people to be on TV again. You know, the centrality of the sitcom is not so much. So it seems there are a lot of people running around of all ages. It's less so than it was. You're right, but people have not been young for a long time.
You mentioned a few minutes ago that you did find the sort of dream gynecologist, but there is an immense amount of research in this book. So you clearly set out on this journey to like find the answer, what was going to make you better. This woman didn't have the answers. Exactly.
Right.
But you know, if they're, for all the women who have experienced this sitting in this room or, you know, who might hear this radio broadcast, where should we go? What's the direction? How did you find an answer?
Well, of course, my book is the answer. No, I'm kidding. Well, to context that for a moment. I think that when I went on this journey, now Christiane Northrup's The Wisdom of Menopause is a fantastic, it's a blockbuster, right? It's the Infinite Jest, Gravity's Rainbow, it's the Odyssey, it's the major book. In fact, I read that book in my 30s because I go, this is an awesome title. What does this mean? And and page one, I was riveted. It's still the Bible of everything. And I think it's a fascinating book because it combines Western medicine, Eastern medicine, Northern, Southern, any quadrant of medicine. And it's an interesting, holistic way to look at this stuff. I think, as compared to many of the books that I found more recently, you know, in the front of the book, instead of like a fanged Medusa face that you would expect, you know, to describe menopause, they always have like a flower or a daisy and a stethoscope. Never a good idea. And so, you know, and it's all, oh, yeah, it's a confusing time, and you're going to have, you know, your estrogen is, you know, kind of going back and forth with your progesterone. So, you know, and it's just, the advice is always cut out alcohol, sugar, and caffeine. Yeah, oh, yeah, all some of us live for on a Monday morning, all at the same time, you know, and just to have the water and the kale. And I think just treating it just so, yeah, kale again, yeah, to help with you. You know, but it's not just a simple medical thing that if you do some stretches, it's all going to be better. I think there, you know, with my dream gynecologist, any woman listening, I would will you to visit the spirit guide of my gynecologist. I think that you should go to someone who's different than whom you usually see, and that the best gynecologist will sit there, as mine did, as you sit there on your paper gown on that metal table weeping, and mine just let me cry for about 45 minutes at least. And she's just handed tissues. And she was actually the most comforting looking woman. It's like Helen Mirren or Angela Lansbury has come to play my gynecologist. Thank you so much. Sort of a sensible cardigan, like your Norwegian, Scandinavian aunt, granted, ever so lovely. Cornflower blue eyes, I think about her still. And she would hand me tissues and she'd say, you know, you're sad. How depressed are you? On a scale of 1 to 10. Is it 10, like we should go to the emergency room? Is it a 1? And does it fluctuate? And I said, well, some days I feel very blue, like a 7, and some days I feel like 4, sort of more of a magenta blue, and then sometimes I have like the big, deep spikes, and then sometimes I have a little irritation. I mean, it was kind of a monologue that not even your best girlfriend would listen to, and certainly not your husband. But she took it very seriously of me describing certain moods, and especially I couldn't describe like the mid-afternoon mood plunge between 3 and 4 in the afternoon. The French say 4 a.m. is the hour of the wolf. For me, it's 4 p.m. When you get that glucose drop, it's carpool hour. Your children are, and you realize you don't quite have it together for dinner, and you're hungry, and it's up to you to go to the grocery store. You know, and that point, and she took it very seriously. She handed me tissues, and she, on a notepad, just wrote down how my periods or not corresponded to this. So the first thing is for them to listen. And that makes you feel really better immediately. And then she said this thing that I would still say is true. She said, you know, for me, I think there's two kinds of women in this world. There are Chinette girls and there are paper plate girls. Chinette girls, you put a lot on them and they're not going to crack. Paper plate girls, you put a carrot on it and it's like, woo! And they're sort of the Eeyores that she just gives as much medication as possible immediately because they're not going to make it out. But she said, at heart, I think you're a Chinette girl, but you're having a very emotional response to something that's very physiological. So let's do two things. Let's take a few things off of your plate. You know, and that's when you're talking about the elderly parents, the children, the PTA, and I love the idea of like the Christmas letters that we get in June. Why? Don't send it. That's what I would say, June Christmas letters. So take a few things off your plate, and then we're going to strengthen the plate at least temporarily to help you get through this. You can take low levels of hormones, low level antidepressants, or if you think you understand this, take nothing. And when the waves come over you of violent emotion or despair, just notice them, watch them, know what they are, and they will pass. But she said, but we'll give you anything you need to get through it. And then I said, I'm going to try some estrogen gel. She goes, great. And so she goes, here, it's just a little bit, a pearl-sized thing. And she leans forward and she takes my wrist and she says, this will probably take a couple of weeks before it starts to work, but this is how you do it. And she gently smears just this little bit of cool gel on my wrist. And I instantly felt kind of high. But just because she was being nice to me and like say, and she was so calming, she talked me down. If you tell a man about it, and God bless the men who are here, you are awesome. It's kind of like, you're depressed, let's fix it immediately. I mean, you just have to be able to talk through it. And so somebody say, you know, I feel that you're feeling distressed, but you're going to be able to work it out. And we just need to give you a lot of fluffy pillows right now and take stuff off your plate. And that was really, and, you know, be kind to yourself. You can stay in bed all day if you want. I always think it's always, well, you didn't exercise and you didn't eat kale. No, I recommend like bed rest. It's kind of like when you're perimenopausal or menopausal, see how long you can stay in bed. Kind of like 4 hours, 8 hours, you know, like, and just, and if people ask you why, I say bed rest is recommended. And just give yourself a break from every single thing. One time I, you know, it's kind of like the high point of my day was Q-tipping my ears, which I guess you're not supposed to do, but it was the high point of my day. And it's kind of like, and I got something done today. I Q-tipped my ears. Good for me. So it's to really lower the bar and have some chocolate.
Stay tuned for more from Sandra Singh Lowe on Speakers Forum. After the break, she'll take questions from the audience at Town Hall. For KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm John O'Brien.
KUOW. Evolution results from the ability of organisms to change. But how does one tell the difference between a far-reaching change and a ripple in the water? Reframing our ideas about what's normal via stories of a peacenik baboon, a transgender mayor, and the domestication of the silver fox in Stalinist Russia. It's all tomorrow night on Radiolab at 7 o'clock. Support for KUOW comes from Seattle Goodwill, offering job training to help individuals find employment and achieve economic independence. Donations of reusable clothes and household items will help Goodwill help others, because jobs change lives. Indie singer-songwriter Eleni Mandel talks about her work, samples her recordings, and sings a song or two, with Michael Feinstein in attendance on Song Travels, beginning in just a few minutes at 10 o'clock.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, this is part three of today's Speakers Forum with Sandra Singh Lowe. Next up, how menopause has changed in recent generations, aliens' resurrection, and the largest swarm of menopausal women in history.
The question is, how does Sandra know she's at 52 at the other end of the train?
Yes. Oh, no, I can't be depressed at this point. I'm very cheerful. So technically, what supposedly goes on is, so the perimenopausal years are where the periods fluctuate. Sometimes they're really heavy. Sometimes men, you need to know this, you know, spot flooding, flood spotting, et cetera, and it varies a lot. And then technically you're supposed to have, if you have a year of no periods, then you are technically into the change that is beyond. So I've definitely had that of kind of a year. And I'll give you my gynecological records later. They'll be on the web, so you can download them, Facebook. And so I know that I'm not having periods anymore, at least for the moment. And I'm experiencing also sort of my moods, everything are much calmer, more even. And that's how it feels at this point. But it's a little bit genetic. I have an older sister. I can look at her, and she's about 3.5 years older. So I kind of look at her at my guide of like going, oh, I'm going to go gray right there. And indeed, like she's a few years ahead. And she also reported that when she kind of turned 50, bang, things really calmed down and it was much better for her. So it's my same gynecological path as my sister is sort of what I'm thinking about. You know, I think it's interesting, and we can't, like that you said you started perimenopause at 13. So I think that's really, I'd like to address that because it's a really interesting thing of like that actually to frame it out a little bit more, which may not describe your exact situation exactly. You know, I think I also wanted to mention that we have a new way of thinking about this because our lifespans are so much longer, and that instead of menopause being the change, since we live to, let's say, almost 90, and you're just fertile those middle 29 years, that's the minimum. You're only fertile a third of your life. Most of our lives as women, we're not defined by making eggs, because most of the time we're not doing it. So instead of menopause being the change, fertility is the change, the middle. And that's Christiane Northrup's idea, where this estrogen cloud comes upon you. You start kind of like cutting up sandwiches mysteriously for all of these other people that could be making their own damn sandwiches. And they're behaving like normal people and letting mom do it and the stepper thing. And then when menopause arrives, the cloud lifts. You say, what have I been doing? Make your own sandwiches. is, for God's sake. You've been using me. And that's when Aunt Edna throws the leg of lamb out the window, because she says, to hell with you. I would like to Wikipedia and Google something for many hours. So, but what is interesting is that sort of in menopause, or we don't call ourselves menopausal women, we call ourselves free women now, your hormone levels return to what they were as a pre-adolescent. You actually go back to those same hormones with a little more free testosterone. So you are actually returning, not at 13, to who you were at 12. So that instead of thinking of menopause as being, you know, as they used to say, a dethroned queen or ceasing to exist for this species, they used those, yeah, in like the 1800s, they would, thank you, say that. You're not like ceasing to exist, you're actually coming home, right? Because it's like you lived on Earth till 12, those middle set, then you moved to the moon for a while, colonized it, did that. Now you're done with that. Now you're coming back home, back to Earth. Welcome home. Welcome home. We should throw ourselves welcome home parties. I'm back to my old self. Cut up your own damn sandwiches. This is awesome. That's not an answer to your question. Okay.
Okay. Essentially, is it hormones plus the fact that you're old enough to know better? You're smart enough. You're aging, and you can just say...
Yeah, and I think just the quick thing to that is Christiane Northrup really was a true baby boomer. So menopause came at a great time when the kids were up and out and the husband was retired. Because in my time clock, I'm a sort of old Gen Xer, we had our careers first and had our kids later. So menopause hits at a really awkward time when we still have teen kids and our parents are older. So it's like, cut up your own damn sandwiches, even though you're four, and they'll be by the side of the freeway, and that won't be good. So it comes at a really bad time now.
Yes. Yeah, I think you say. How can you tell the difference between you think you're done and then it's a little bit hot or humid and you think, is that a hot flash or is it the weather?
You know, being now the this medical menopause expert that I am, I think it's part of the way, and people, you know, report all different kinds of things. They're still having hot flashes in their 70s. There's a 1% of women who feel it forever. I mean, it's really kind of all over the place. And I think I'd answer that question in two sort of not very satisfying ways. One way is that I think the one unsatisfying way is, you know, when were we ever really normal as women? Was it as a teen? No. Was it in the middle? Was it like, so I think it's part of the beautiful dance that we're in of kind of like, it's who knows? And it really has varied up for a lot of women that I've talked to of maybe you're in it, maybe you're not. So vary the patch, take the patch off. What does it matter? I think the other one quick thing I want to say also, though, is that there are these Tibetan monks who practice a kind of Tummo yoga where they meditate to bring on hot flashes, to sort of cleanse themselves. And so, you know, I try to think of that as kind of like, well, it's happening to us naturally. Thank you, flabby menopausal body, for cleansing my chakras the way the Tibetan monks do. Thank you. That is awesome. You know,
I'll have to reframe it totally.
Yes.
I hadn't thought about it that way at all.
Totally.
Has your idea of career changed and evolved over these years?
I like that question, and I like how you contexted the LA thing a little bit earlier. So my clock, again, I'm 52, I'm on the LA clock, where, you know, in Aliens Part 3 or 4, where they tell Sigourney Weaver, I thought you were dead, and she says, I get that a lot, right? Do you remember that? So living in LA, at 36, I was already dead and too old and over. Now I'm 52, and I feel like incredibly youthful, because I like to say kind of when I was, you know, 34, people said I looked 45, but now that I'm 52, they go, you look okay. You know, so I think I've had a long time ago, living in LA, had to make my career about something other than being young. And I remember when I was 35, they said, you can't write for TV or blah, 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 because the demographic goes to 35. And I realized, well, there's a lot of people 35 and older, so I'll just work for them. But if you think about it now, women ages 45 to 60 are America's largest demographic group. There are 50 million women that are that age. And by next year, 2015, wait for it, almost 1 in 2 American women will be menopausal. Right? Half of all American women will be menopausal. You are the future, or those of you who are, and you men are too, you can be in menopause. We are the largest swarm of menopausal women in history. And we are now given, and I think if I can context this a little bit, whether your career is politics or not, I'm going a little afield, but it's kind of like where if you look, and just to finish, like there is, for instance, in politics, it used to be we can't have a woman president because she once a month she's going to lose it and hit the red button. So it used to be that the handicap was estrogen, but that, as we know, is ridiculous. The handicap in politics is testosterone, right? Especially if you're a Democrat like I am. What was that about? Like Bill Clinton, Gary Hart, John Edwards, insert 12 like names here. Like what? Our brilliant politicians had the one small problem, right? Or big problem, whatever it was. So, and if you look at somebody like Hillary Clinton, evolutionarily, this is interesting. She's ruled not by estrogen. She's ruled not by testosterone. She's going to live forever. After that one crack about cookies many years ago, she'll never make another misstep in a Republican Party. So I think it's interesting of like we women, we are America. We are the future, and Angela Merkel, we're running everything. Yeah? Yeah. So it's going to be a really interesting next 25, 50 years.
I feel like we're speaking with the oracle here. We have time. We have time for one last question.
So are you saying what kind of mom your kids are going to be looking for?
I want to get away because she's crazed and menopausal.
You know, I don't know. That's a really good question. And I think that in the old-fashioned way, kind of like the mom, and it's the relationship difference between parenting today and it was before. We are, for better or worse, we're the friendly moms that are too close to our kids. We talk too much. We don't have hard left lines in discipline. We let them be too creative. We don't, you know, again, that's a longer thing about like the tiger moms versus the panda moms or whatever they are, and of kind of like what mistakes will we make that are gonna, when they're on the therapist couch, what are they gonna be talking about? And that's a really good question, and I don't quite know the answer to that. I know my oldest daughter has a little bit of the mothering thing in herself, and it gives her satisfaction to be able to sometimes give that to us. I think really there's every kind of mom. They know I will blow up in the middle of dinner. I just hate sitting down at dinner at 7 and having a conversation because I really want to eat at 4 in the afternoon in a cave in the Antarctic alone. So I joke that now we have such a harmonious thing that Mr. Y and my kids are just having great conversations and mom just like, I gotta leave. But they're used to me as being this presence. So I guess in the end, they're going to find what they're going to need in this tribe of extended people. And sometimes it's not just up to the mom to be the mom character. Sometimes the grandmother is the mom. Sometimes the aunt is the mom. Sometimes the mom is going to be the teenager for a day, as long as you're there and like Sylvia Plath, you don't put your head in the oven, which I know is a pretty low bar. But they're going to find that somewhere it isn't always in the form of the, like I found it in my gynecologist because my mom is dead. So I think that they'll be able to find that, and it isn't always the mom's role to be the mom, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean?
It's yeah. More the concept of yes. Momdom.
Yes. Yes.
Sandra, thank you so very much.
Oh, my pleasure.
And for doing all this research so
yes.
that we don't have to. Thank
yes.
you.
Thank you so, and thank you so much for coming. Thank you. Really appreciate that. Really. Thank you. Thank you.
You've been listening to an interview with Sandra Singh Lowe. Her new book is The Mad Woman in the Volvo, My Year of Raging Hormones. Lowe was interviewed at Town Hall Seattle by KUOW's Marcy Silman on May 6, 2014. Town Hall and Elliott Bay Book Company presented the event as part of the Arts and Culture series, sponsored by City Arts. To listen again to this talk or pass it along to a friend, navigate over to our website, kuow.org/speakersforum. And while you're there, please let us know what upcoming talks you'd like us to feature. For Speakers Forum, I'm John O'Brien, KUOW 94.9, Seattle.
Support for KUOW comes from Puget Sound Blood Center, serving patients in 80 hospitals across the Pacific Northwest. Blood donations this summer will make a difference. Information is at psbc.org/donate. Puget Sound Blood Center, saving lives every day. And support for KUOW comes from Overlake Medical Clinics, providing neighborhood health care options through 6 adult and family medicine clinics on the east side. Clinic locations and other information at overlakehospital.org/clinics. Overlake Medical Clinics. We think about you.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.